Welcome to the Presentation Podcast, episode 101. Here is another Design Studio conversation about presentation design and the business of presentation. Here are the show hosts, Troy Coller, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Okay, welcome everybody. Here's the deal. The world is focused on remote presenting. And thank you for being focused on listening to a podcast that happens to be talking about remote presenting. It's executives, it's sales teams, all the way down to teachers, students, and grandparents. Two episodes ago, which would have been episode 99, we had Ken Mollet of Webinar Success. We focused on being a remote presenter and the hardware and software platform options. There was a mix of slide design tips in it, but not as much as we really were looking at a lot of the technical side of it. This episode, we have a big group discussion going on. We have Nolan, we have Sandy, we have myself. We also have Mike Parkinson, Cliff Kennedy, and Richard Goring joining us, and we're focusing exclusively on the actual slide design and presenting techniques of remote presenting. So if you are a remote presenter or a presentation designer preparing slides to be used by remote presenters, we've got you covered with lots of ideas and lots of best practices. So let's get going.
Okay, first, before we dive in, I'd like to welcome and thank all of our listeners to today's podcast. The last episode was our 100th episode, and the feedback that we got and the kudos and the love was just awesome. And you are our inspiration, and we're grateful for all of your support. So thank you. As Troy mentioned, we have a great lineup of guests with us today remotely. We're practicing safe distancing across the country. So with us today, and I'd like to give each of you, Cliff, Richard, and Mike, a chance to introduce yourself and give us a snapshot of your background and where you're geographically located. So let's start with Cliff Kennedy. Cliff is one of those, our newest MVPs. So most of our listeners might not know that, but Cliff was recently awarded the Microsoft MVP for PowerPoint Award, just like Nolan and Troy and Richard and Mike. And we're excited to have you join us on the Presentation Podcast and, of course, the MVP group. Cliff, say hello and let our listeners know more about yourself.
Great. Thank you, Sandy. It's great to be here with all of you. As you mentioned, I'm a new MVP, and this is kind of the one of these talkers here is not like the others, and that my background is much more on the writing, creative direction, production side of things, of events. And for the last 10 years, I've been focused on helping individuals, teams, and organizations communicate better, whether it is a big stand-up presentation or more dynamic communication situations, or today, like many of us, presenting remotely via online.
Wait, hold on, Cliff. Where are you located? Did you say it so everybody knows?
No, I didn't. I forgot to say that. I'm located in San Jose, California.
I mean, this is important people to understand. It takes a lot of coordination when we have multiple time zones to get us all together. And we're here. This is good. And Cliff and I are the only two on the same time zone. So we had it easy. You guys are the problem.
right. Thanks. So Cliff is from San Jose. How about you, Richard?
Well, I'm in Boston in the U.S., so actually I'm in the same time zone as Nolan. We're just 500 miles apart or so, and I work for Bright Carbon, and we have the same kind of problem as a company because most of our team is based in the U.K.
Aha. And Mike, please, welcome.
Hey, I'm stoked to be here. I live just outside of Washington, D.C. That's where my office is. I own two companies because apparently there's something wrong with me. One is called Billion Dollar Graphics, which are tools and books and training to help people kick butt and take names with visual communication on their own graphics. And the other one is called 24 Hour Company. That's a services firm, creative services firm, where if you don't want to do it, we do it for you. Basically, I'm a giant nerd when it comes to creative communications.
I love it.
All right. Thanks guys for all the intros. We've known, obviously, Mike and Richard for a long time. Cliff, it's great to have you as an MVP. And we're all looking forward to getting to know you a lot better. And so I think this probably, you know, the sort of first topic might be a good one to throw your way, Cliff, because you don't consider yourself a presentation designer, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, but as we're talking about, you know, the design of online, design always in some way has to start with content development. So let's talk a little bit about content development. Are there specific recommendations you have, considerations as you plan the content for a presentation? So for online presenting versus our more traditional in person, is there any, what are you seeing? What do you feel about that?
Well, obviously, actually, even in a remote situation, your content is even more important, I believe. It has to be, you know, much more focused and direct and clear and concise in these online situations, because it's just so much harder to keep an audience engaged. When I work with clients, I have this 10-step content development workflow. And actually, step 10 is open PowerPoint. So I always begin, I work with my clients to developing the foundations, which start with a clear purpose, which is, you know, creating something of value for your audience, and then digging into the audience perspective and kind of seeing what they want to, what your audience sees and believes, and starting there. Because it's so much easier to start in their world and bring them over to yours than to say, hey, come on over here with me. And then also part of the foundations is having a clear vision and a theme that, again, that can unite your audience and let everyone kind of understand what you're saying in very short and quick manner. And then the other thing I work with my clients to do is really identify their primary and secondary messages. So often, you know, people present the evidence, these secondary messages, and, you know, here's some data, here's a story, here's some new information, but they really don't create that conclusion, the primary message for their audience. And if you don't give your audience a conclusion, they're going to concoct their own on their, you know, one on their own, and it may not be the same as what you want them to believe.
What's your feeling? And we're going to, Mike and Richard and everybody jump in whenever you want, but you were talking about that conclusion. Are you the kind of person that suggests giving that conclusion up front or saving it in a dramatic way for the end? How do you come down on that?
My initial rule is lead with your conclusions. Because what you want to do, again, it's in, you kind of have to guide your audience in a way. This way it's much better. Here's your conclusion. And also it engages, you know, I try to help my clients kind of create more provocative conclusions. So, which again, that creates more engagement. If you want someone to really listen to you, say something that they disagree with. And that really pulls them in. So the idea of that, so as a general rule, lead with your conclusions, but also, you know, part of this is I call it the experience arc, which is how can you kind of create more dramatic tension? And so then it is, okay, so maybe you don't lead with every conclusion all the time, but as a general rule, you should.
Mike, what do you think about that?
Couldn't agree more. What is it? GWTP? Get to the point. Tell me why I'm here and about ready to listen to you. And then if I find value in it, then I'll put my brain focus on the presenter. And that's really what it's all about, is to get people engaged. I love the dramatic thing of pulling people in and saying something they disagree with. I'm totally stealing that clip. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. I stole it from Aristotle, so don't worry.
Well, he didn't understand remote presenting, but I will interject here that this is my fourth call of the day, and this is probably the most fun one I'll have all day as well, because I have three more after this. But the number one request of all of these meetings, large or small, is how do I engage the audience? How do I not lose them? And it's not the technical. How do I assure they're actually logged in and they've got an engagement meter going, you know, this and that. It's this. How does the presenter keep things rolling and not have people turn away and start working on other things because they're not, you know, physically in the room? So you can get away from, you can get away with more multitasking than you could in a live meeting environment. It's a huge topic.
And actually, I want to keep going back to, you know, this whole idea, incorporating the audience perspective is critical. I mean, it's a cheap trick, but when you start talking about you and the way you see things and how you feel about stuff, you think I care about you and that you're going to listen to me more.
But is there, go ahead. Sorry. Is there anything different about that online? Like, do you, cause I actually find, especially with webinars and stuff, I seem to not, even though we do surveys in advance, which really, really helps. I feel like I just don't know the audience as much. I mean, I literally can't see them, and they're from all over the place, you know, geographically and you know, some company wise and stuff. So is there anything different about getting to know your audience online versus in person?
Yeah, that's a great point. And again, if anyone has other things to add, but it's, you know, that lack of connection. I always have my clients use like an empathy map, you know, what they think, what they feel, what they say, what they do. And you kind of, you know, start understanding your audience a little bit better that way. And you may not have that face-to-face connection with them or that, you know, in-person connection, but you can at least kind of create some empathy for them.
Richard, I've seen you present tons of times. And actually, one of the things I'm really impressed with you is you're able to give shorter presentations and yet still seemingly cover lots of information. Because like I recently saw a webinar you did that I think was only like 30 or 35 minutes. And in retrospect, it felt like it had to have been longer. So do you, Cliff mentioned, you know, you've got less time to grab an audience and convince them and things. Do you prepare less content online? Talk to me about timing, like how you feel with regard to that.
So in general, what we try to do is come up with as little content as you can get away with to achieve your objectives. So, you know, whether that's kind of a sales environment where you're trying to get them to buy something or move to a next step, or whether that's a training environment where you're trying to educate them about something. There's different objectives that you have. And so what is the shortest amount of time that you can spend to do that is the ideal. So a lot of the stuff that I do that you've seen is trying to teach people how to use PowerPoint or how to do presentations. And so you can kind of go quite extensively if you want to. And so at that point, you've got this kind of huge world of content. Pick out what are the things that people can actually do. I mean, a bit like you do on the podcast, it's what are the things that will kind of be valuable to people? What are the things that they can take away and use right now? But then maybe there are references to kind of other resources. And so that's why having a series of content can be really useful. So I think minimizing it is really helpful. And just briefly to go back to the point before about trying to engage with your audience and kind of ask them questions, it's nice if you can tailor your content to meet their needs. And as you say, you often don't know, maybe there's a review beforehand of what they know, but other times it's going to be during the session. You mentioned with Ken Millay a couple of weeks ago, having a moderator there on a webinar is really important. And I totally agree with that, because as a presenter, it's really hard for you to try to directly engage with people. You know, all these platforms have chat capabilities, which is kind of fine, but you can't read it and at the same time present. So having a moderator there or a producer or a co-presenter or someone to be able to read all of that content is really valuable, because then they can act as the advocate for the audience. They can then be that person that has that you would normally have the conversation with if you were in person with them.
Yeah, I did a webinar last week, and we did a pre-questionnaire in the registration. I only asked two questions. And yet I felt in reading the answers to the two questions, if I hadn't asked it, I would have been so much more lost. I mean, just getting the answers to two questions that not even everybody answered gave me so much information and made, you know, told me who these people are, why they're here. So you don't have to like ask somebody, you know, to fill out pages and pages of stuff, even just one or two key questions before you start. You know, you do polls during, but sometimes with webinars. But
if you think about just the questions at the start, though, like two questions is probably ideal, because any more than that and people aren't going to answer them, I suspect you're going to get fatigue. So it's getting as much information as you can as the presenter.
And then if you look at those answers, and then you even if you make an assumption about the audience and that assumption is wrong, you're still going to make a connection with that audience, because you're showing that you care about them and how they feel.
Pre-planning. It's definitely a bigger consideration now, because you can't get that stuff live. When I do a conference talk, I like to get there and talk to people ahead of time. I like to get a feel for the room, get a feel for a few of the people at least that I can use as a benchmark for conversation while I'm on stage. And you just can't do that. So the idea that two-question survey is awesome, Nolan.
And would you agree that it's harder online to pivot and sort of improvise and be flexible? I mean, because you're not getting that feedback, but also I just find I've got to be a little more scripted online than in person.
I think so.
To that point, but I was just going to add to that point, not only there's a technological delay, and I don't want to get into the technology, but part of the awkwardness of presenting online is when people can't respond to you immediately. And as a presenter, when you're used to presenting and getting, you know, people nodding their heads or falling asleep or whatever it is, you're used to getting some sort of feedback. The delay causes a weirdness in your brain, I guess.
Oh, but absolutely. You then recognize that as well, though, and say, yeah, absolutely. Like, you think about an in-person environment, you ask a question and immediately you get responses.
Yes, yes.
But in online, of course, you can't. And it's not just the time it takes people to chat. It's also the time it takes you to read it to be able to respond to it. It's the time it takes for people to realize that you have asked them a question in the first place and then find where the chat is and all of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I know.
But you think about that, and that is a huge delay. So you then change it around a bit and signpost it and say, right, in a moment, everyone, I'm going to ask you a question. And I want you to type your information in the chat. Well, partly that. And then I want you to type your information in the chat, which is in the bottom right-hand corner of your screen or whatever. Guide them to where they need to go, because all of these platforms are slightly different. And those small delays really add up for you to think, oh, this just isn't very good. And then likewise, if you have a producer or a co-presenter that can ask some of those questions to you as if they were an audience member, it becomes that bit more natural. So you kind of, you need to have some padding almost, or some signposting to the question coming, to allow that kind of feedback, and then the co-presenter can work with you.
And another thing to keep in mind is that your perception of time is out of whack as well, especially in these online virtuals. You're looking at a screen, you really don't, you kind of lose that perception of what time really is. And so that a pause to you may seem like forever when it really is just a second or two.
Okay, speaking of perception of time, I got to move us to the next topic, because we're going to talk for our entire episode on this one. So taking off, jumping off of, I believe what Richard just said is it's good to have like a little bit of content and have a little trivia in there. Email just popped up for me that our presentation podcast, it's no joke, this really just happened right now, not pre-planned. We are number 6 in podcast rankings in arts and design in Bulgaria.
I think wow.
Nice. I'm thinking that would be Boris Christoph. Thank you. I'm sure you're Boris, a big part of that, you and your team. Oh my gosh. Okay. So, but I actually want to pick up on what Sandy was saying there and going with the idea of technology. I want us to touch on it here, but we can't dive deep into this. So, before we get into the actual slide design, I'm going to say this topic right now that I'm going to propose, I think it's as important as the slide design. That's why I want to kind of preemptively put it out there. The equipment you use is how the audience will judge you. You are most likely not going to be on camera. If you are, don't be dressed in a t-shirt and, you know, comb your hair. I would like a lightning round of recommendations on things like external mic versus a laptop microphone, headset mic versus like a separate boom mic, like I think a lot of us are using for the podcast recording, headphones, webcam, lighting. I mean, all these things are how people perceive you. Because if you're that person that's in your kitchen that's super echoey to begin with, using your laptop microphone and you're 3 feet from it, and it's, you sound great because you're in the room. Everyone else hears this horrible tinny voice that the laptop microphone with its noise canceling may be cutting you out here and there. I mean, that's how you're perceived. So lightning round, what do people have or recommendations or don't do's for remote presenting?
I use, surprisingly, the best results I've found is AirPods Pro. I use those and you're hearing the quality right now.
Okay, next.
I use an external mic and I have speakers or a headphone to monitor myself as well. But I want to add one quick thing though. Basically, having a semi-professional look is table stakes now. I mean, you can't.
Absolutely.
It's expected that you understand the technology and, you know, you're maybe not a master of it, but you can present a professional looking sound and video. I mean, going back to Aristotle, it's the ethos, the credibility is an important appeal to in rhetoric. And so if you can't put together a functioning webcast, they're not going to buy your $4 billion contract.
I think Aristotle, like Logitech's headsets most often.
Okay, that's diving too deep, not actual.
So I go with Cliff. I recommend a dedicated microphone, a USB external mic or a headset. Both can be really good, but make sure that you then try it in the platform that you're using, because yes, it can be very different. So behind the curtain a little bit for everyone, we've been testing audio equipment and levels and whatnot, and I've got a proper condensing mic and it sounds terrible on this platform, but sounds really good on all the others that I use. Whereas the headset that I'm using at the moment sounds better, which is a little bit bizarre, and yet in other platforms can sound really poor. So try to use the actual setup or platform that you're going to be kind of using so that it can all work together and make sure that the audio is coming through correctly.
I agree with that. I think that's an excellent suggestion. And it eliminates problems, not only in the audio, but just from an organization. You pop onto a different platform and you're ready with the right mic and you know it's going to work. It not only does it make you sound more professional, but it makes your life less stressful on our end.
I would agree with Richard and Sandy. I actually probably have four or five different sound inputs for various reasons. Like Mike, I've got AirPods Pro sometimes, which I use, which I like. But like there's this continuum of communication. Like if I'm just hopping on with one person, I'm not going to get down my expensive podcasting mic with the headphones and everything. And I'm also not going to use that doing webinars generally, because it blocks so much of my face, or I just don't like the visual of it. So I recently got a little sort of Madonna headset type thing, which I'm just experimenting with now, but I really like the quality of that. But also the other day I got on one headset and a minute before the webinar was supposed to start, it stopped working for some bizarre reason. So I was able to switch to a different one. I feel like it's Madonna a dated reference these days. All right.
The only other equipment I would recommend is a good chair. So that you have good posture as you're speaking, which is a speech coach. That's one of my things.
See, now that's an interesting side conversation, Cliff, because I'm sitting down right now, but when I'm presenting, even for remote, I like to stand up. I stand up. I have a microphone that obviously works for that level. And I think it helps carry the conversation more. It also lets me do my hand gestures without knocking over my coffee or hitting the microphone in front of me, like I just did a moment ago. What do you think about that remote?
I think that's if that makes you feel more comfortable. And again, but it's more of that, goes back to athletics and stuff, but it's, head over shoulders, shoulders over hips. And, I recommend a balanced athletic stance as you're speaking. And whether that's you're in a chair or on your feet, it's the same thing, but it's good posture.
Cliff, I got to tell you, so I've got a fancy ergonomic chair that I love, but I got dinged on a recent, webinar feedback. Somebody said that I was swiveling too much and it was annoying them. So right now, believe it or not, I have bungee cords on the bottom of my chair that take down the swivel, and I'm trying to train myself not to swivel as much.
Should be a lock for that.
There's a human scale. It's a human scale, and I haven't figured out if I don't think you can lock it. But
that's really funny, Nolan. I've never noticed, and I've seen you on many webinars. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
How about we start talking about PowerPoint and slide design and considerations for slide design, like slide layout, the amount of content on each slide, styling of slides, all in relation to the remote viewer when you're giving a presentation.
One of the techniques I've been using lately is, and I'm sure Cliff, Richard, Nolan, I'm sure all of you will back me up on this, is we want to keep the audience curious, because if they think they know, if they know what we're going to say before we say it, they're going to tune out. So some of the things I've been doing is minimalist slides. There's a new movement in design called MaxiType. Essentially, it's a clever way to say that you're filling your slide with some nice looking text. The goal is that we engage them emotionally, and the brain loves safe surprises. So I like showing some visuals, not giving exactly where I'm going to go with it so they have to pay attention, but giving them a reason to care. Another thing that I think I'm jumping ahead here, but one of the things that I like to do is ask open-ended provocative questions that they answer internally. So it's like a poll, but not polling. For what it's worth. Yeah. But one of the other things about design is, and I'd like to get your opinions on it, is the prevailing winds are pulling toward material design And the things that are competing against that are traditional design, which is mostly skeuomorphism, which makes it look like a photograph, and then flat design, which is somewhat modern because of the ubiquity of cell phones. Everything had to be simplified. And then material design. I think that's going to play a major role in how you're perceived, just like Troy was talking about with how we sound is going to play a major role in how we're perceived. That gut reaction. I judge a book by its cover. If you say your content is professional, it better look like it, sound like it, feel like it, and taste like it.
Mike, do you want to define material design?
Yes, I was going to ask the same question.
I'm sorry. Material design is basically blending the two. So skeuomorphism, look like reality. Flat design, keep it simple, silly. You mush them together and you have material design where it uses elements from material design like 3D, but without all the bevels and drop shadows and gradients and textures. So you're okay using that, but the goal is to do it in a simplified way so that it has that modern aesthetic, that simplified aesthetic, but still has the benefits of 3D when 3D matters. And that's essentially what material design is at a 10,000 foot level.
Would that include isometric illustrations?
Absolutely, which is okay. Why you're seeing this huge explosion of isometric images and everything that we're doing, not only because it's material design, which is going to be around for a long time as far as the design aesthetic, but it's also modular, meaning that it's really easy for a designer or someone who's not a designer to take these disparate elements and put them together to tell a story.
Yeah, you might have to drag me kicking and screaming out of the flat design world. But I hear you. I agree.
Well, I'm going to pick up on what Mike said and simplify it really far, because my key statement to presenters as we're putting together their content is we're presenting online. First of all, it's a new world for many attendees, the audience, and many presenters. So your simpler is the better mentality. Animations, you can live without them if you have a good design. Transitions, the same idea. Content, if you have a simple few call-out items, again, a very modern way of presenting. But as soon as you go to remote, I see a lot of people just suddenly putting their bullet list up there and reading through the bullet list. Let's go simple on the slide. Let's engage the person watching to have enough information to be interested and hear how you explain it. But let's not just give it all away, or let's not try and do too many fancy things, because we can't control the bandwidth on the other end. That amazing animation, and I'm one of the people that loves motion graphics in presentation work. If you strip them out, you're guaranteed of what the other person's going to get. So at this stage in the game, now this may change 2 years down the road when bandwidth, transmission, a lot of other elements are more optimized. But so my marching orders are simpler is better, not boring, but simpler in all aspects.
When I work with clients, I ask them this question. It's like, who's working for whom? Are your slides working for you? Or are you working for your slides? And it's stark, because a lot of people go, oh, here's my slides, here's my presentation. No, your presentation is not your slides, it's you. And so really do that. And then my only other, because I'm definitely not in the, actually I'm learning a lot about the material design from this, but my only other tip for a design thing is to really, I said, put your headers to work. And I like this whole idea of working, but this is where you, instead of like announcing a topic as your header, make it your conclusion or that open-ended question. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. I call it an insightful. It's insightful. Like, it tells you what's on the slide.
Right. Make the slide that much more provocative.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Mike, one of the reasons I love your presentations is I love presentations that don't necessarily make sense without the presenter there. Right.
Oh, and that's
what you were talking about. And I think, Mike, would you agree on, do you find yourself using more slides online in order to keep that surprise and engagement sort of going? I don't know if I find myself using more slides online, but I find myself paying more attention to pacing, having that right amount where, you can't put a slide up just for 5 seconds, but you can't leave one up for 4 minutes, because you got to find that balance in between.
Right, that 5 seconds. If you have one for 5 seconds, it takes 10 seconds because of the delay, and people aren't keeping up with you. So you're right there.
You just glance, to look at the cat, on the other side of the room. You look back, and the slide's gone.
So. Well, that's a great. Okay, so this is a really good conversation point for slide design, because I finished another set of meetings where we're running the presentations, we're doing the back end stuff, but from our own studio, we're doing it for the remote presentings. And a lot of the presenters continued on the same path that they normally do. They have a setup slide, they have an intro slide, and then they have a content slide. So there's three slides that will span one sentence of talking. Well, I find those to be too fast for a remote presentation, because people are trying to figure out what the first slide was even for, and now they're onto the second slide, and sometimes there's a delay. There's a lot of issues there, but I really feel that those have to be simplified down. But you don't want, like you said, Nolan, you don't want 4 minutes on one slide, because if there's nothing happening on screen, especially if there's no webcam, there's no live video of the presenter, it's easy to lose interest or not pay attention to the screen. It happens in a real live audience meeting as well, in person. But so I'm finding that that mentality, which is what this team was used to, totally did not work for the audience. Mm-hmm. There was actually chat comments. Did I miss something with those slides? Would be a pretty common chat element. It's like, ooh, anybody have feedback on that? You can have too many slides too fast.
It's really tough. I mean, so I think it all goes back to kind of understanding the situations. Like, is it a small group of people who you can work around, that, you know, you're not dealing with cross country, cross continent, or you're staying within, an organization's VPN, those kind of things.
Well, so I'm going to redirect the conversation a little to talk again about the slide content and text sizing, because we're not working in a live meeting where you are in a conference room with a big flat panel screen, or in a big show environment where I'm at, where you have a 70-foot wide screen. You know, how do you feel about density of content on a slide, and maybe even font styles? I'd love to hear others' opinions on those two elements.
So just remember that when you're creating content, make sure you're using visuals to keep it engaging, or a minimal amount of text, but that's kind of fairly standard. What you need to really consider is the screen size of your audience. And remember that they are likely going to be on a small little laptop screen, and it's not even as big as the laptop screen that you've got, because they are an attendee in an online meeting. And so they've got a window to see your presentation, and around the outside of it, there's all the browser stuff and the chat stuff and the attendee stuff, and if people put webcams on and all the rest of it. So by the time you take all of that into account, they're probably using at most half of the area of their screen real estate, certainly no more than 2/3. And so that can be a real problem. So designed for a very small screen indeed for the actual content.
Yeah, very few platforms allow the speaker or host or presenter to force a view on people.
Correct.
So yeah, so you really don't know. This goes back to what Ken Millay said. You just never know what the audience is looking at or seeing when you're presenting.
Let's go with it's a remote meeting to a large audience, let's say 20 to 2,000, you know, so it's a big meeting. We're not expecting a ton of interaction as much as a presenter just presenting information. And there's no webcam use. So I've had a conversation at least a half a dozen times in the past week alone about how do we create the title slides? I don't want to lead everybody into an answer, but have you, for remote presenting scenarios, have you done anything different with the setup or the title slides for a specific remote presentation?
I'm curious to know what you're doing, Troy.
Well, I don't know if this is the same thing, but I will have what I call a banner slide that's up as people arrive, or it will be the housekeeping slide. You know,
that's a totally separate topic. Hold on, let me cover this one, and that's a great that's a great thing to talk about, because that applies to. Okay, hold on. Let's go with this. So, remote presenting. Again, I said earlier, you know, your voice is going to carry, you're going to be judged by the sound quality of your recording, not your voice, but how your voice is captured. So I highly recommend a good microphone and headphones separate, so you can raise yourself above everybody. But with title slides, I've done three different things that are very unique to presentations. One is just add a photo of the presenter to the title slide. In a remote presentation, we're assuming people don't see you. So we've done a lot of photo title slides. And the other thing we've done is we've done video intros. you know, a pre-recorded small video of them on the title slide. And the third thing we've done is we've added a lot more information to a title slide. We've added, like at the beginning of our podcast, we've added geographic location. So people understand it's 5 o'clock in the morning for the guy on the West Coast presenting than the East Coast attendees that are chimed in. So we've added a little bit more than name and credential. Sometimes we've added what department they're in. Sometimes we've added where they're geographically located. So, I mean, have you guys done anything like this or have thoughts about this for remote presenting?
On my title slide, that's the second version of the title slide. There's a little speech bubble that says you should be hearing sound now, because some people are not always, you know, sure when things start, you know.
Oh, I like proper. That.
And with the Presentation Guild, this is something I really should start doing. When we do webinars for the Presentation Guild on GoToMeeting, the hold slide as people are coming in is just a little technical, some screen grabs information about here's how to set your mic or here's where's the Q&A panel is and things like that. Here's how to turn the videos on and off, just to tell people, which I really like.
We have the same thing at the start of our webinars. It's a rolling sequence, though. It's three slides that change every 10 seconds, which have things like you're all on mute and we will begin talking in a moment, for example. And this is kind of the title of the topic and kind of who's presenting it and just things like that. And here's how you can manage the setup, just so that when you dial in, it's something a little bit interesting rather than just a static slide. And we have, you know, nice illustrations and whatnot there that are a bit of fun too, but it's giving people that information.
But that is one thing to point out. I mean, I think Richard and I probably agree to disagree on the amount of animation in a presentation. But depending on the platform, you're going to have very different results. Sandy, I think GoToMeeting is terrible for lag. Zoom is much better. But Teams, where you're allowed to upload your presentation, then it basically becomes, you know, PowerPoint online, animation there, I find is much better. So, you know, you got to know your platform.
I think so. Amazing. What about specialty content that's like a software demo? Or do you use the chat and Q&A or polling or any of those other polls?
What about transitions?
Exactly. Transitions kind of on the slide design thing.
Yeah,
do you use them? I'm just curious what you're recommending to people and what you're personally doing at this point for all of what I would consider high-end, high-glossy elements in presentations. Are we still encouraging them? Are we using different ways of encouraging them? What are the best practices we can kind of say are out there? Go.
So yeah, well, thinking about broader terms in terms of the specialty content, one of the things, of course, you really want to try to do is engage with people. So you can use the standard kind of chat elements in the standard online meeting platforms. As I said before, you should generally signpost to people, signal to them that you're going to do it so that they're not completely lost. But some of the other technologies that we quite like are where you can go beyond that. So it's not just the standard polling. Often a lot of these things have, you know, kind of polling capabilities. It's relatively simple. If you are going to use them, fine. Make sure that they have a purpose. Make sure you've planned it. Ideally, have some kind of moderator or producer to manage it for you as well. But just so that everyone is aware, there's lots of other kinds of technologies too. And so it was well worth looking at some of these and seeing if any of them are going to help you to tell your story and engage with people.
Engagement and attention really, really good for those elements to come into, I think. Anything you can do along those lines that seems to seamlessly roll into the technology and provide an engagement opportunity is really valuable at this point.
And especially with the polling, you want to build from the polls up versus build your content and then go, oh, what do we want to poll about this? So it's, you know, almost, you know, finding the responses from the polling and then having your content react to that versus having your polling react to the content.
Absolutely. That would be so good if I could get anybody on the presenting team to think that way.
Think that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, what about PowerPoint subtitles?
Ooh, there's a one I haven't even thought of. You mean the ones that you can turn on with PowerPoint online version?
Yep, yes, oh, exactly. And while you're speaking up there, are they...
So I was on a webinar, I was giving a webinar the other day on Zoom, and I knew somebody who was on it was hearing impaired. Now, doesn't mean completely deaf, but hearing impaired. And I thought about it, and I didn't turn them on because they go on for everybody. And balancing that distraction for everybody until we get PowerPoint Live, whatever it's called, where the user can turn them on themselves and not everybody sees them. Or Zoom's feature, which is in beta, but it will launch where it's live transcription within Zoom where each user can turn them on. So I didn't turn them on, but at one point I turned my camera off to focus more on the screens, and she asked me to turn my camera back on. That was a learning for me. That
Little lip reading, interesting.
Yeah, because that helps people with hearing disabilities and people who are non-native speakers as well to get some context by seeing you speak.
And Nolan was flattered that somebody wanted him on camera. Exactly.
Everybody always wants him on camera.
Yes.
This has been a really good conversation. I think as we start to wrap up, is there anything else that we didn't talk about, or anything that Cliff, Richard, and Mike want to throw out? Considerations when you're presenting online.
Yes. All right. So you're giving a webinar. Got a whole bunch of people showing up. 500 people going to show up. They all don't show up at top of the hour. So as the facilitator, I know their expectations are managed because they know, hey, I logged in late, I'm probably going to miss something. However, you can almost guarantee that a measurable group will not log on at the beginning. So all of you, each one of you, have done webinars for large groups of people, and attendance was staggered in as you started. What did you do to make sure that you didn't lose those people? Because a lot of times, a lot of the biggest bang is right up front.
That's why I believe you really need to create that experience arc, and this whole idea of creating some tension. And then I talk with my clients about these things called like an energy map, where things start and where things end, and you'll have little dips and ups and downs that go throughout it. This whole idea of conflict or resolution is, the big bang is the resolution at the end and the solving of the problem, or the happy ending that everyone wants to stick around for. But in these large groups, you're going to see, a little bit lower in the beginning, you're going to peak. I've done some like 2-hour seminars, and it's like, peaks after 1 hour, and then it goes down to like 75%, 60% of what you originally had. Another thing to keep in mind is a lot of people are going to watch the recording too.
Yeah. And Mike, I don't know if I have a real answer. Once you've started and then people just show up late, it's the same thing in a live presentation when people walk in late. But I do know a lot of people are trying to start meetings or webinars at 5 or 10 after the hour, not only to help with the bandwidth load, because everyone logs in around the world to things at the top of the hour, but also so that you always start on time. So if you're, people will still show up at, 103, 104. And if you always start at 105, it helps get more people in the room.
Nolan, that sounds like the wedding planner that schedules the wedding for 3:15 in the afternoon, but they send the announcement out saying 3:00.
Yep.
We typically try to provide a little bit of content up front, which contextualizes what you're going to do. Yes. So it's not essential, but it's useful and it's interesting for those that are there. But then if you are 2 or 3 minutes late, to Cliff's point, it's you then get that kind of big bang content relatively near the start, and then it could be right at the start if you're turning up a few minutes late.
It's called the pre-ramble. A little bit, you talk about, again, but hopefully make it useful and really setting context and providing preparing the audience for what's about to happen.
Does anybody have like a technical host? So the series of meetings, another series that we're in the midst of right now, we have a technical host, and they're the ones that are going to talk to that upfront informational slide before the meeting starts. It's up 15 minutes before. It lists off the basic settings and what they're going to expect. It has a little video animation of their of the company logo going, things like that. But if people join in late, you can see when people join in on the participant list on almost every platform, the technical host has a preset copy paste. They private text message that person. Hey, the meeting's already begun. Contact me for any questions. Here's a really quick summary. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a way to get those people to feel like they're a part of the meeting, eliminate them interrupting the meeting with, hey, I'm sorry, I'm this and that, or technical questions like, hey, I can't hear you. They have somebody to talk to. It's kind of like the, at the theater.
Am I muted?
Yeah, exactly.
Are these slides going to be available?
I think it's really valuable in a higher stakes meeting to have a couple of different behind the scenes players.
Well, don't do this alone. I mean, the whole, you need a team to be successful. Minimum one person being that technical host, the producer, whatever you want to call it.
So something that we might think about that's coming out in the future, Microsoft is introducing, and they've teased this live presenter. Is that what it's called?
Live presentations
at the beginning of a presentation and throughout, the presenter will show a link, a scan code, scan it, and you can log in on your phone and follow along that way. There's going to be subtitles there. The language can be translated there, but very importantly, the backup slides, the slides that have already been covered are there.
And you'll be able to access it through any browser as well. So it can be on a computer. Yeah.
That's brilliant.
Again, that's the point of the world. The whole idea of remote presenting is shifting rapidly. Mm-hmm. Microsoft has a couple of new things I'm very excited about, that being one of them. It's not out yet, but those are going to be technology shifts in how we get to look at presenting our slides, because now those latecomers can look at the earlier slides. Hopefully they'll, again, this is a little bit of the opposite story. You need enough context for those to stand alone or make sense for the person to get it, even if it's just the title slide, so people can look and see who the person presenting is and their credentials at that point. There's a lot happening. I had a really funny story I'll throw into this. Nolan, you asked for, did we miss anything? Meetings, like live meetings, cost a lot to put on. I mean, you've got to pay for the ballroom. You've got to pay for the tech crew. You got to pay for the equipment. You have to pay for lunch for everybody. And that is a huge expense. So we just had a large meeting, say, I just was on a call recently. We're putting together a proposal. And the statement was pretty much this. Okay, this is going to cost a lot more than what you normally do, because we're going to put together an entire presentation management system, and we're going to use a different platform, which costs considerably more than using Zoom. I'll just say that. But here was the statement. He's like, my food and beverage budget will for 2 days will cover your entire project episode, and I don't have to pay for any of that. So just go for it. So budgets are a whole different conversation now too. Side note conversation, but I think it's an important one to understand that bigger meetings have shifted their focus, and they need to. Richard, I thought of another one that's been used and people are wowed by this. Do you know how to do an electronic laser pointer? Anybody?
Oh, yes.
PowerPoint?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I banned those. I'm sorry.
Why?
Because you just turn around, you're looking at your screen, and you're not. When I talk to
presentation. In a remote presentation, you can hold the control key down and mouse click and hold, and it creates a laser dot on your slide. Because I still recommend people use animation to highlight the areas that you're going to talk about, but right now, when people say, as you can see in this chart, the so-and-so went down. Well, it's a complex chart. People are going to spend the whole time searching for it. You can actually create a virtual laser pointer, which is an old feature of PowerPoint. I think it's getting new life all of a sudden as people rediscover it.
One of the things I like to do is I'll draw. Well, as I'm talking, I'll draw the slide out. And I'll mix it up with, some well-designed slides, and then start drawing and circling areas. So that's basically the pencil tool or pen tool in PowerPoint. And I can switch in and out of presentation mode and just use the drawing tools built within new PowerPoint to start drawing on it. And it's captivating. And I love the fact that we're going back and forth. So we go to the polished, prefabricated slide, and now we go very basic, rudimentary. I'm drawing with chalk on a pavement.
Yeah, it's so much time.
So what we'll often do is, or not often necessarily, but when it's appropriate, you create part-made slides. And then in slideshow mode still, you do control P, and then you get the pen tool in slideshow mode, and you can then draw. If you've got a touchscreen kind of laptop with a pen or something, it's much smoother. And in fact, you can just pick up the pen and draw, and it'll pick it up automatically. But even just with a mouse, control P to create that pen tool just allows you to do, as you say, that kind of extra level of engagement. You've still got mostly polished stuff there. And it's like, here's another chart, for example, and then you can highlight various elements of it, or add a trend line, or the new data bar, or whatever it happens to be. And it's a really nice way of doing it.
And this all emphasizes the need to have clear and concise content, and not, and so instead of, you know, you're not giving a 40 minute presentation, you're really going to give 8 5 minute presentations, and you know, three of them are going to be doing this, you know, the drawing or using something else, you know, so you're kind of looking at it in a different way, but having your content solid so you can really start experimenting with these more kind of specialty approaches.
I'm surprised that I haven't had a conversation about using inking on a presentation, and that more people aren't talking about it, because I'm actually,
I love it. Use it all the time.
It's just like all of a sudden like, hey, wait, this is an amazing option.
Yes.
Mike, you're awesome for bringing that up. And it literally has not come up in conversation in the past month of me talking remote presentation projects and presentation design. I'm actually, wow, that's really cool.
Okay. And it's such a time saver. As someone has to conceptualize, first of all, I do everything that Cliff was talking about. I figure out, you know, what's going to motivate the audience, what's the learning objective and so forth, and then come up with the content and something that's provocative and engaging and curious and all those things. Oh, and now I have to go design the slides. And then that's so much work. So it is also another technique that's a huge time saver, because it's quite engaging when someone's talking and drawing at the same time to help people follow it. Even if you use it to circle an area instead of using the old school laser pointer, which totally works too, is, you know, hey, I'm talking about this topic, let's circle this topic right now. It's movement on the slide. Sandy was saying that. What is it, 5 seconds, something like that?
And that's engagement. I mean, that is a great engagement element. That's why I'm surprised it hasn't come up earlier. Okay, presentation design specific to remote presenting is a real thing. It has become the standard practice, and it's become that really fast. I think as far as being a standard practice, it's evolving fast. Maybe that's the better thing to say. This has been a great group of presentation experts together, and all the contributions are an amazing collection of information, tips, best practices. Thank you, Mike, Richard, Cliff. It has been so much fun to spend time talking, well, in this case, about remote presenting. For those of you joining us, we will see you in a few weeks with a new episode and another conversation. This is Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, a professional design agency focused on presentation design. Check us out at tlccreative.com, thepowerpointblog.com, and facebook.com/TLC Creative Services.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Whiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwhiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as PPTWiz.
I'm Cliff Kennedy, from a communication success coach at Kennedy Speech Communications. Learn more about me and my 5 steps to improve communication performance services at kennedyspeech.com, or connect with me on LinkedIn.
This is Mike Parkinson with Billion Dollar Graphics and 24 Hour Company. Do go to billiondollargraphics.com or 24hrco.com and learn more about our creative services and creative communication solutions.
This is Richard Goring from Bright Carbon. You can find our blog and our free webinars every Thursday at brightcarbon.com, or follow us on the Twitter at brightcarbon as well.
And this is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. And if your organization is interested in remote training these days, give us a call.
Also through the podcast website, you can contact us with episode suggestions or questions for the hosts. It would be great if you to mention us, leave a review, and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, or Spotify. And please let other designers know about us. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services Incorporated. New episodes release on the first and third Tuesday of each month.